there, everyone, and welcome to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday, the 30th of August. I'm Maddie Playle, and I'm joined by Graham Rodway and Mark Boylan to look back on the weekend's action. It was pretty quiet stuff, if truth be told, but we did see some real potential top notches in the two-year-old division, at least. And we're going to build up towards this weekend, and Group 1 Fare is back in the shape of the Haydock Sprint Cup. G-Rod just telling me off-air beforehand the ground's looking pretty good, which is quite rare for Haydock at this time of the year, but that's sure to make it an interesting contest with the likes of Starman engaged. But first off, let's talk about the ITV action at Goodwood on Saturday. At 1:50, it was the Tote Prestige Stakes, this Group 3 over 7 furlongs. It's had some good winners in previous years, certainly Group 1 standard. A mise-en-scene won for Ashin Murphy and James Ferguson, a relatively new trainer carving his way in the industry. She beat Danae, the favourite, and the daughter of Rosina, who was highly touted beforehand after running so well in a Group 3 in France. What did you make of this as a performance? Because her form at Haydock on debut wasn't that strong, Mark. I wasn't convinced anyway, but I was proven wrong.
Yeah, I thought she got style points in the way she did it at Haydock, but there was a lot more substance to this, you're definitely right. You'd be very, very taken with it, and I thought Ushin was supremely cool. Never really panicked at any point, and Danae, plenty went right for her. I think she's a good, solid filly, but I think the winner just has a little bit of X factor about her. The sort of calibre of filly she's going to bump into in a filly's mile is another question. It will be definitely another step up again, but I thought this was an up-to-scratch renewal of the race. And she got the job done very convincingly. So I'm excited about her. And I think over 10 furlongs at least next season as well, there's a good future ahead of her. She's not slow or anything like that. But I was pretty taken by this. Thought it was a good performance.
There's some real quality in her pedigree, isn't there? 8-1 from 33s, I believe a couple of firms cut her to for that filly's mile. But you think perhaps looking at it directly, well, she's by Siuni out of a Galileo mare, but she's related to Speciosa, who won the Guineas herself, of course, and a Group 1 winner in Pride as well, over 10 and 12 furlongs. G-Rod, what was your assessment? Who were you keen on beforehand? Just remind us.
Yeah, I think the winner is quite good, Maddie, don't you? I like Clithero before the race. I thought that Clithero was quite an eye-catcher when she ran first time out. I think it was at Newbury, staying on really strongly over six. But the worry for Clithero, of course, was that she was drawn right on the wide outside in stall 10 with Jamie Spencer on board. So I felt there might be only one way she would be ridden, and that was to be dropped in at the back from that wide draw. And that's exactly what Jamie Spencer did. And she just ended up too far off the pace and didn't really know enough either to stay with them. She was still very, very green. I think that she is a horse with a future still, Clithero, but that Group 3 assignment just came far too early in her career. But I quite like the winner. I thought she looks pretty good. And James Ferguson is John Ferguson's son, isn't he? The former Jumps trainer, of course. He was had plenty of success over Jumps a few years ago, and he's got a super strike rate, James Ferguson, and this really could be the first proper star that he's had in his stable. So it's going to be absolutely fascinating to see how he handles Mise en Scene and where we see her next. Yeah, possibly a Group 1, maybe, Maddie. She looks up to it, I think.
Positive vibes then on Mise en Scene. What about Hello You in fourth? I think this could be quite a pivotal part of the season where we see those early two-year-old types just beginning to look a little bit exposed against some of the horses that you anticipate will make as three-year-olds. Do you think that's fair, G-Rod?
Yeah, I think it could certainly be the case, Maddie. She's a good horse to rate the race around, really, isn't she, Hello You? Because we've got a pretty good handle on her now after five runs. And yeah, she had a few decent RPRs for Rafe Beckett, and appears to have been marked down for this run, down on 96 on Racing Post ratings, her best being 103, of course, when she chased home Sandrine at Royal Ascot. But you would say that somewhere between 103 and 96 is what she's run to in this Prestige Stakes, and she gives a good idea of what sort of level the form could be. I would probably race it slightly higher than our two-year-old handicapper has done, but we'll see, won't we? We'll see who's right. That's the great thing about racing, isn't it?
Exactly that. Now, that was on Saturday. I just want to jump back momentarily to Friday and at the Curragh and talk about one of probably my favourite juvenile performances of the season, if not my favourite outright. In the Hyder Family Stables Round Tower Stakes, a Group 3 over the 6 furlongs, slightly different type to mise-en-scene winning this, but Sacred Bridge now unbeaten in the 4 starts for Jer Lyons. Colin Keane aboard, of course, I think this was his 99th out of that fastest century he notched. So fantastic achievement for him. But I think this was lost a little bit in some of the weekend fare. Maybe not the strongest event, Mark, but she is quality through and through, I think. Where do you think we'll see her next? In a race like the Cheveley Park, perhaps?
That'd look an obvious sort of target, Maddie, wouldn't it? I thought she was very, very taking too. It looked a decent sort of running of the race on paper. There was that nice blend of kind of experienced juveniles taking on, you know, maiden winners that were stepping up in class for the first time. Now, she was very, very impressive. You can pick holes a little bit maybe with some of what happened in behind her. Like, I mean, I don't think Sam Maximus has run up to form. He's been quite busy. You know, Ladies Church definitely could have settled better, would have given her more of a chance. And she was one of her, they're two of the main rivals. And, you know, you go down through the field and some of them haven't stepped up, but I think they would have had to been absolutely on their very, very A game to get close to her. She was very, very good. And, you know, she's proven it in a variety of settings as well. You know, she's got the pace to get herself out of trouble over 5 furlongs at Tipperary and win Cosley in a listed race, albeit an ordinary listed race. And she's able to handle a 22-runner sales race as well and win that in good style too. So she's very versatile. Quick ground seems to be right up her street. And if she got that in the Cheveley Park, she's going to go there and she's going to be a single-figure price at the very least anyway. You know, she's very, very smart. And, you know, Jared Lyons has got some nice juveniles kind of over that sort of trip that could develop into kind of Guineas contenders. I don't know about her in terms of getting a Guineas trip. I'd like to maybe, I wouldn't be against trying her in a Guineas and then dropping back to a Commonwealth Cup. That wouldn't, I think it's worth a shot if she progressed in that way or she gave them that sign over the winter. But I think that'll be dependent on kind of how she goes over her next few runs, how the few months go in terms of her physical progression, etc. But really, really likeable, as you say. And just a really, really nice performance.
It was indeed. And the trip game is an interesting one. With a filly like Mise-en-Scene, you would not really have any questions about her staying the mile, especially if she's going to be aiming at the filly's mile this year, let alone next. But Sacred Bridge, you look at her and you think she's a sprinter, but I've had a delve through her pedigree and sort of put her under the microscope in my column for the weekend of this week, and I think it's absolutely fascinating. I'd love to see them at least try it, but by bated breath, she certainly has that speed influence as well. G-Rod, how would you compare the two juvenile fillies we saw on Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, I think they're both pretty good, Maddie. I was impressed as well with Sacred Bridge, and it's very hard to knock a horse who just keeps winning, isn't it? She's got a bunch of ones by her name, and that's one of my great sayings in racing, really, is it's very hard to assess unbeaten horses because you just don't know what they're keeping back for themselves. You know, if they keep winning and nothing really is able to push them right to the limit, that you're never quite sure what's still left in the tank. She might well have more to find if she was really, really properly challenged. So I do like the fact that she's stringing together a lot of ones. And it's a weird pedigree, isn't it? I mean, she's got like loads of stamina in the pedigree. They're all milers and a mile and a quarter, all of her siblings. But yeah, she appears to show a lot of speed, obviously being by bated breath. So it is going to be fascinating to see if she stays. Now, on pedigree, you would say she's got absolutely no problem getting a mile and possibly even further. But yeah, just something about the way she goes through her races suggests she might be a sprinter. So, like Mark says, maybe the best way to do it would just be to experiment on the track.
Indeed, and they can often go back to a race like the Commonwealth Cup, can't they, if it doesn't quite work out. Of course, Jer Lyons has had such a great run with his younger horses, bringing them through. He ran Siskin in the Middle Park, didn't he, the colt, and that ended in disaster in the stalls. But I'll try not to regurgitate too much more of my column, and you can wait and see for that on Wednesday. Let's go back to Goodwood on Saturday and talk about the Tote Quad Box Starts Here handicap, again over the 7 furlongs, and it was won by a really progressive horse in Aratus. G-Rod was saying there he likes horses with ones by their name. Well, this horse, again, he's got 4 of them. And he won very nicely under David Egan. Escobar closing rapidly late, but not surprising of a horse of his class. Obviously, the winner did have a 3-year-old allowance, but how high do you think he can fly, G-Roth?
Yeah, it's quite an interesting one because, like you say, who knows whether he can go a lot higher, because I felt that he was always holding on from Escobar. I backed Escobar, and I didn't even bother shouting because I just thought he's not going to get him. He's always going to hold him. He's just holding him, just holding him. And just like I was saying, like when you got horse that keeps winning, you know, I just felt like Aratus had a lot more in the tank than the neck margin. I'm fairly certain if Escobar had got right alongside him, Aratus still would have won. Although that may possibly be because Escobar is, of course, a professional loser. but I do like him, Escobar, nevertheless. He has got some very good form. Let's not forget, it's only a couple of runs since he was beaten two lengths behind Creative Force and Kinross at Glorious Goodwood in the Group 2 there over seven furlong. So he really was a class angle going back into a seven furlong handicap, and Aratus just swatted him away. Of course, he was giving Aratus way, Escobar. And the other thing I would say is that although it was only nine in the race, being drawn really low, even in small field races around Goodwood over seven furlongs, is a huge positive. And Aratus was very well drawn in stall two. So that's another thing that might hold the form back a little bit. But having said that, he's winning. And we just don't know what we might still have left in the tank. I think that there'll be a bit more to come from him. And the handicapper, because he's only won by a neck, might find him a hard horse to keep a lid on, Aratus. So he's certainly exciting. But I'd love to see Escobar just win one of these. And he certainly deserves one drop his way.
He does, doesn't he? The last two performances from Aratus, both in the comments, it says always doing enough. So I think your assessment's very fair there. And Clive Cox, he had a fantastic weekend, didn't he? Different winners at different tracks for that trainer. But Aratus certainly one to keep an eye on for the future. Let's move on to the feature at Goodwood, the Tote Celebration Mile, the Group 2. And there was a bit of a shock here. Quite an interesting race tactically, as Ben Battle, the 9-4 favourite, was awkward at the start and slowly into stride. Bit of a muddling affair with the early front runner Pogo staying on to finish third. He had the likes of Chindit and Perotto staying on late, but they just couldn't get involved. But it was Lavender's Blue who swooped down the outside to win at 20-1 for Rob Hornby and Amanda Perrott. Of course, this filly owned by Benny Anderson of ABBA fame. She's always been highly touted. She won the Atalanta Stakes a couple of years ago, but had failed to really deliver on that promise. But I sensed quite a lot of people would have been frustrated by this result, Mark, because she was a big price and perhaps many people would have thought this wasn't the time for her, but that's not how it proved.
No, I think if you're on either of the two big contenders in Ben Battle or Chindit, you can be a little bit frustrated in one way or another, more so at Ben Battle. Like, I mean, it's one of those things. He just, the stall's open and he's just taken a slight rear back, or he hasn't got off on the right terms, and straight away you've surrendered, you know, considerable ground at a stage of the race where you just don't want to be doing that. And, you know, Oisin, I think he did the right thing. I know he's been beaten in the end, but he's only beaten a short head. And I think he's done the right thing in knowing that he got a horse that stays a little bit further than this. And obviously had the chance in a pace that wasn't, you know, a run off your feet pace to get back into it. But when you consider the ground he's forfeited, that he hasn't raced ideally, and he's beaten a short head, there's little doubt that if this had unfolded differently, I think he'd have won. That's not to take away from the winner, because I think she's done well herself to get on top. And she's really, really solid too. Like, I mean, you go down through her form, okay, there's been the occasional off day here and there, but I think she's generally, you know, thereabouts, and she deserved one of these to fall her way, no more than we were talking about poor Escobar. But Chindit as well, I mean, lots just didn't go right from here. He went for a run, it was everywhere he went, there was an issue for him in the close stage. I'm not saying he would have won, but he would have finished much closer. And just give a shout out there to Pogo as well. I know he's not a superstar, but he's one of these likeable horses that turns up and gives his running. And he's picked up more black type here, finishing in the three. You know, he's one of them horses that you'd really enjoy owning him and taking you to these big days, getting a good run out of him. And I'm sure, you know, when he drops in class a little bit again, he can pick up one of these. But in terms of results, a little bit of frustration that the two market principals didn't probably get to bring their absolute best to the table in the circumstances.
Saeed Binsa was saying beforehand they did think that Ben Battle, for all he was in good shape, would come on slightly for the run. Do you think on the back of this he'll be winning more Group 1s though?
Probably internationally. I'm not sure if he'd win one in a QE2, let's say, or a Champion Stakes. But I think you can go back to Dubai again and you can have a right crack out there. If they ever wanted to try their Australian experiment again, I think he put it up to them down there again. I think he still retains a fair level of ability. And, you know, as we were speaking about in the Friday podcast, like, for all that he's been good when he's on his returns previously from big layoffs, that was as a younger horse. As a 7-year-old to come back here And I know he goes well fresh, but you know, the body's a little bit older at that stage. I thought it was a fair effort in the circumstances. And if he had won first him up, yeah, well then we're looking, you know, the difference between winning and losing, I wouldn't lose my head, lose any sleep over it. But I think if he's gonna win a Group One, probably won't be in Britain or Ireland without being knocking the horse. But I think there's more chance of him. I'd be fairly optimistic about him getting his head in front of the top level somewhere else.
And he's proved, of course, that he's capable of travelling already. A Group One winner in Australia, in Germany, and elsewhere as well. Who's your one horse to take out of this race, Graham? Because as Mark said, it wasn't straightforward in the closing stages.
Yeah, it wasn't really a race that I really liked at the time. When I saw when I watched it, I thought, well, that don't look a great Group Two. Lavender's Blue getting up to beat Ben Battle, and obviously Pogo being banned there as well. Yeah, solid, nice horse that Pogo is. He obviously isn't a top class performer. But, you know, when you look at the time of this race, it is by far the best time on the card. It was fast by almost a second, fast and standard by almost a second. And Ben Battle would certainly have won. You can call me a pocket talker if you want, but Ben Battle would certainly have won had he not missed a break so badly. I mean, we all know that Ben Battle likes to really dominate or be prominent in his races, and to have his head up in the stalls in the way that he did when they opened and lose so much ground for a front runner, I just thought that was his chance gone as soon as he missed a break so badly, because when you see that happen to horses like Ben Battle, usually that's curtains. But you know, be fair to him, he really showed his class to get up and go so close and only be beaten a short head after that happened to him. And we've got him slightly below his very best, I think, on 116 on Racing Post ratings. So again, had he not had that mishap at the start, he probably would have got to somewhere in the region of 118, 119, which you can generally rely on Ben Battle to run to about 118 or 119, which is about his level, I think, nowadays. Now, the problem for Ben Battle is that Group Ones in Britain and Ireland, to win them, the average race in post rating, you usually need to hit about 121. And the fact that he can be relied upon to run to 118, 119, but not 121, suggests that he's somewhere in between a Group Two and a Group One horse, because the average for a Group Two winner is 116. So on those figures, he's better than a Group Two horse, but he falls a couple of pounds short of Group One class, which must be very, very frustrating for Connections. Having said that, he has won plenty of Group Ones on his travels, of course, but I don't think a lot of those Group Ones that he wins over in Maidan and Australia and all that are quite as strong as the ones he gets over here. So I don't think Ben Battle will be going on to win a Group One, Maddie, but, you know, he was desperately unlucky not to win this race, I thought.
Great insight there on the crunching the numbers of the Racing Post ratings. I wasn't aware of that, but you can really categorise it down to those numbers. What about Lavender's Blue? Let's give her some credit. Would you be looking at backing her for a race like the Matron Stakes, or again back against her own sex? She's been touted for the Breeders' Cup. Do you think she could be suitable for that race?
Well, I think she needs a good run race. I think she needs it to fall a bit in her lap, and maybe this one did. As I say, I mean, when I was watching it, I wasn't entirely convinced it was the strongest of race or that they went that fast, but the time suggests they must have gone a fairly decent lick. And she is a strong travelling horse who likes to come through horses, but she doesn't always finish her races as strongly as you think she's going to. So I do think that she needs them to stop a bit in front, and maybe just here with Ben Battle having to do so much running early in the race after making a mess at the start, maybe he just did stop and she was able to pick up the pieces. I don't think she is a top class performer, Maddie, but I've been wrong before.
We've all been wrong before, haven't we? Now, I mentioned earlier in the show that it was a cracking weekend for Clive Cox. One of his old heroes won at Beverley. We're going to talk about him just after this short pause.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. Plus, exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
It was the William Hill Beverly Bullet Sprint Stakes at Beverly on Saturday, and it was won in fantastic style by Tis Marvelous for Clive Cox. Paul Hannigan aboard. This old horse, he's really, put it this way, I'd be surprised if you're a regular Saturday punter and you haven't placed a bet on him before, running up the likes of Ascot, etc. Always shows up in these decent handicaps. A seven-year-old now, but probably as good as ever on the back of this mark. Is that fair?
Yeah, he was dynamite here, wasn't he? He was very, very good. In terms of how the race was going to shape up, he was one that I just felt would need to take another little step forward. You know, he wasn't a million miles off your judicials and Dakota Golds on ratings by any means, but and he was coming in good form. But I just thought there was maybe a little bit more upside, maybe in a couple of others, or circumstances suited a little bit better. But the stiff five, that plays to his strengths. I think he's, for all he's been in over five, I wouldn't like him at a sharp five now. I think six is absolutely A1 for him as well. You know, in terms of a race, I don't know. It was a grand race. I don't know about it being absolutely knock your socks off in terms of quality. Justin Rabattle is definitely an improved horse when he gets the blinkers on him, and he's really enjoyed himself over there, and he's bumped into one on the day. I think softer ground is going to help Dakota Golds. But it was, in terms of pure enjoyment, having backed a loser in the race, I don't think I would have enjoyed a race all weekend as much as seeing that you've backed a loser in, as seeing this fellow win. He's really, really likeable. And as you say, I think it's seven wins now. He's always knocking on the door, and you can rely on him to show up well in those big handicaps as well. He's a really, really likeable horse.
And when I spoke to Clive Cox on Friday, he reiterated that very much to me. He is a fan favourite around the yard. So just really good to see a popular horse still running right at his peak at the age of seven. What of those in behind? I've got one horse that I have had my eye on for his last two runs, but I'm going to go to you first, G-Rod. I don't want to steal your thunder if you also spotted him.
No, probably didn't, because I didn't think anything massively jumped out at me from in behind. Now, it is a race where it tends to be dominated, this race, by pace. So you really do have to be up there to have a chance of winning this race. And Just Another Bottle was blasting away, wasn't he? And from his low draw and stall one. And I just thought he gave Tis Marvelous an absolutely lovely toe into the race. And Paul Hannigan absolutely smashed them up, didn't he? It is marvellous. He was brilliant over the last couple of furlongs. Really, really strong at the finish. But I'm hoping, given that I just said that you need to be prominent, that you're going to have picked one out that came from off the pace and ran very well here, Maddie.
That's exactly true. Go on to the Racing Post website, guys, and look out for the replays. I encourage you to watch Ostilio's run back here, because he was...
Yeah, he was like handsome, wasn't he?
Yeah, in the rear, on the rail, was never going to win, but absolutely stormed home to finish fourth, nearly beat Judicial for third, just by a head. And I also thought his run at York behind Copper Knight when 40-1 was pretty eye-catching as well. Obviously, five furlongs for this horse, who's won a Britannia, don't forget, as well as a listed race back in the day. So he really is high quality. I feel like they're definitely getting him ready for something, Ostilio. I backed him for the Air Gold Cup, but I've got to be honest, I think it's unlikely he'll get in off his mark. Maybe he'll go up a couple of pounds for this performance, but I definitely think he's one to keep an eye on, because we know he's got the ability and he's certainly coming back into form. So hopefully that didn't disappoint G-Rod.
No, that was absolutely spot on, Maddie. That was just what I was looking for. Something that had come from nicely off the pace in a race which didn't suit those who came from behind, and you nailed it.
good to hear. And talking of a race like the Air Gold Cup, I did cheekily shoehorn this into the running order. I want to get a fancy from each of you for this big handicap, because it's always a good betting contest. I'll be keeping my eye on Ostilio to see if he gets in. Maybe it'll be the silver version or something else for him. But what have you got your eye on at this stage for the Air Gold Cup, Mark?
Geez, I mean, to me, these sort of races are shaped so much by draw, where the pace is going to be, ground. You know, I think if you're on the race in different circumstances, you're going to get different results, obviously. If you were to ask me for a speculative one at this stage, Gulliver is a rock solid option to me. He might not have a sexy profile as some of these might do in terms of maybe more unexposed types coming through. But, you know, very, very good run at Glorious Goodwood. Very, very happy with what he showed there. I thought he could have won another day. And he run very well in the race before. The year that Tom Dascombe's horse won, name escapes me now, Angel Alexander, the year that he won, I thought that was a smashing run for him. He was coming off the back of an eye-catching run at Irish Champions weekend. He's just a really, really reliable sort in those races. to me, I think he'd be an each way bet at the prices. But to tell you now that he'd be absolutely rock solid on at this stage, I'd be lying.
The weekend could have been quite informative when it comes to race like the Airgold Cup, because we had Summergand, who would race off top weight. He won, of course, at Newmarket, and also Tis Marvellous himself could go to the Airgold Cup. G-Rod, any thoughts on that race at this stage?
Well, I've long thought that Bielsa was an absolute certain there, Gold Cup winner at
point
in his career. But how many times have you been disappointed by him? He just keeps finishing second and fifth and fourth. And he's got a string of good efforts, hasn't he, by his name in big field handicaps. I backed him when they ran him at Ascot over 7 furlongs. Wasn't entirely sure that that trip would suit him, but even so, he ran a cracker. He was 8 for 28 that day. Then I backed him last time out again when he ran, I think it was in the Stewards Cup, was it? And again, he was sort of out in the centre of the track on his own, and all of the runners came away, were racing away from him, and he was only beaten a couple of lengths. Again, 6 for 24. I mean, he was unlucky to be beaten by a Punchbowl Flyer at Haydock earlier in the season. He likes soft ground. He's certain to run well, isn't he, Bielsa? If you back him each way, and you, like, on the day, some firms go like 7, maybe even 8 places, I'll be absolutely amazed if he isn't placed at the very least. I do love Bielsa. I don't know if you know it, but I like these old rogues, Maddie, you know, like Bielsa and Escobar and all those kind, because, you know, I'm a strong believer that although they might be a bit roguish, every horse has their level, you know.
That's true. And I spoke to Jim Goldie a couple of weeks ago, actually, and he was saying the quirky ones often have the most longevity because they don't always put 110% in, and they kind of enjoy the chase of it, if you like. So I definitely think there's legs to that theory. Both Bielsa and Gulliver at Mark's fancy at around the 16-1 mark. I'm scrolling down here trying to find Ostilio for you guys as well, but I think he's around the 33-1 mark anyway. But that's if he gets in. Anyway, talking of these old horses, who's your favourite old sprinter? Because we've had some crackers over the last couple of years, Mark. I mean, even just thinking of you, it made me think of like Sir Gordon Lord Byron, who was just an absolute legend. Have you had any that have really stuck with you, do you think?
Jeez, you're catching me on the hop there now. I absolutely love Gordon Lord Byron. I love his story. Tom Hogan is a real character of the game, and when he got the right resources in that horse, he showed every bit of patience with him, and to watch him progress and do what he did, and to do what he did in Australia as well. I think that's, you know, for all that he was very, very good down to the end of his years, like the quality he showed to go over there and beat them in a Group 1, I can't think of many European horses that have even tried that, let alone go and win one. So he was an absolute star for them. And, you know, every time he ran, you know, you regardless of what you had sided with in the race, if you tipped up something or back something, you'd never begrudge seeing him win. So, yeah, he was a real favourite. But it's a category, Matty, that there is always horses coming through that, you know, they can be knocking on the door in those handicaps, let's say, and then sometimes they find another little level where they might be more comfortable in stakes company. They do seem to just hang around, and, you know, if I was going buying a racehorse in the morning, I'd love to buy one of those sprinters. You know, obviously you'd love to buy a Gordon Lord Byron, that goes without saying, and for the money he costs such little, you definitely have to buy one. But I do think that there'll be great crack in terms of, you know, longevity, being able to run them so often, opportunities. I think it's a real place that if I was ever lucky enough to go down that road, I'd really like to do it, but I couldn't afford a Labrador at the minute, so here.
They give us plenty of fun, though, don't they? Another one, Soul Power. I used to love watching him out in Dubai, and I think he went to Hong Kong. Just a fantastic old horse. G-Rod, any quirky ones that you want to chuck in the ring?
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw in a huge favourite of mine from years and years ago, which was the Tatling. What a horse he was. He ran 176 times, according to our website, just looking him up. And he obviously won the King's Stand Stakes in early 2000s and was still good enough to win his last ever race at Wolverhampton on Poly Track nearly 10 years ago. He was an absolute star, the Tatling, for Milton Bradley. And I struggle to find one who's got my heart more than the Tatling did all those years ago.
Even I remember him. He was a grand old campaigner, didn't he? I remember him trotting into the stalls at Wolverhampton on his final start. Absolutely loved the game. Now, you can tell who's read the running order here, by the way, because I did chuck that favourite old sprinters line in there. Mark, did you read the running order regarding the Travers card and any thoughts on that? Of course, Japan was the big name for Aidan O'Brien, who went over there, but it wasn't to be for him, although maybe he was the best horse against Gufo in the Sword Dancer.
Yeah, definitely found out there for just skimming down after the Beverly Bullet. Apologies there on that front. But no, I did that, and I was watching Saratoga, yeah. Japan should have won, shouldn't he? Just in different circumstances, it would have panned out, whether it's pace or been a different position would have helped him possibly. Yeah, thought he was unlucky, and it would have been nice to see him get another top day under his girth. I think he's shown at times to be disappointing maybe in those big races, but there's been some consistent efforts this year. There's been more, I think, although it's at a lower level maybe than he was campaigning previously, I think there's been something to take from his runs more so this season than last season, definitely anyway, where he was, he was very hot and cold. But I thought it was a good effort, and actually gave Gufo a shout there on Friday in terms of being a horse that, had a good time for. He's not wouldn't compare to some of the better, middle distance horses we have over here in Europe, but he's a really likeable sort. And the Travers, like, essential quality. He is just, he's the toughest old bugger you'd see. Like, I mean, for a 3-year-old who just seems to be able to take these massive races, and we know the Travers stakes down through the years, Saratoga, what do they call it, the graveyard of champions. We've seen, I'm trying to think, 3 or 4 Triple Crown winners. You had Gallant Fox, who's definitely beaten Secretariat, American Pharaoh, Affirmed, well, he was first past the post and he was disqualified or demoted against Ali Dar. If you're of my sort of age and you're not totally familiar with some great stuff on YouTube, watching back the rivalry that they had in the 70s, I think it was absolutely fantastic stuff to watch, just brilliant horse racing. But for him to go and do that, and albeit I'm not so sure about the depth maybe it's in behind him, it's just his style. He's the sort of guy, if you're on a night out and there was a few dodgy lads looking at you, you'd send him to the front of the queue to mind you. He's absolutely rock hard. Big time for him. And if we get to a Breeders' Cup Classic situation where he might have himself and Nick's go, that'd be a race for really to look forward to.
Impressive knowledge there. You really have redeemed yourself. And it was a fascinating card at Saratoga, wasn't it? Because you had Forenzi Farr in the Four Go Stakes trying to bite Yupon. Good old Yupon, though. He stuck his head out, didn't take much notice. But absolute savage, wasn't it? And to go full circle, Viadera won the Ballston Spar Stakes of Grade 2 earlier on the card. And who is she a sister to?
Well, that's Sacred Bridge.
Than Sacred Bridge. You've got it. There we go. Let's talk about the Haydock Spring Cup coming up. Grade 1 action to get our teeth stuck into. Let's take a break first.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. Plus, exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
Welcome back to the final instalment of this Monday Postcast, and the big race we're going to focus on this week is the Haydock Sprint Cup. And as we mentioned earlier on in the show, the forecast not looking too bad, G. Rob, what's that going to mean for your pick in the race?
Yeah, I mean, usually you think Haydock Sprint Cup, you think soft ground, don't you? But there's some nice weather forecast up there at Haydock. And as long as they don't overwater, it should be on the far side of good. And this year it's a fantastic sprint division that we have. Obviously, Starman being the star, having won the July Cup, which I thought was one of the strongest July Cups I can remember in recent years. And he's going to go off a short price here, isn't he? I thought he was a little bit disappointing that he was beaten, of course, in the race at Deauville. But maybe he is ideally suited by fast ground, which he got on Newmarket. And if he returns to that sort of form, then nothing is going to live with him, because a Racing Post rating of 124 is well and above a good Group 1 winner. And I think he's got £5 in hand on RPRs. And I hope we do go and see him win. And I wonder if they'll keep him in training next year, Maddie. Do you know, or are they going to send him off to stud if he wins this?
I'm not sure, I'm not aware. Mark, have you heard anything?
Geez, I don't want to go misquoting anyone now, but I have a feeling that it might have been mentioned to bring him back next year. I think it was in a piece, it wasn't in any way concrete now by any means, but it was a piece that was kind of highlighting that his options maybe towards the later end of the season were a little bit limited when you look at his preference for ground. So I'm not quite sure. I wouldn't like to put it out there in any definitive sense, but he's the sort of horse that should stay in training next year anyway. When he gets quick ground, I think he's the best over six that's around in Europe, close to it anyway. And I think if the ground is good, he'll win. But if there is an ease in the ground, from what you're telling me there about the ground doesn't seem, or the weather, we shouldn't expect that. But I just think he's the best of these. I would like to have seen Dragon Symbol come and give him a crack, but he hasn't showed up in the confirmation. So I'm sure there's other targets for him. But he's a standout to me easily.
Let's run you through some betting in the race sponsored by Betfair. Starman 11-8, Creative Force 100-30, Glenshiel 11-2, Art Power 15-2, along with Supremacy for Clive Cox, who had such a good weekend, as I mentioned earlier. Gustavus Weston for Joseph Murphy at 9, and then Summergan. Well, will he take his chance in a big weekend race yet again? He's 16-1, 20-1 bar. Mark, if I had to give you a free bet at this stage, would you put it on Starman? It seems like he's got an awful lot of fans, this horse.
Yeah, like I definitely wouldn't back against him, I put it that way. Like, I mean, there might be better horses his price running this weekend, or around his sort of price, but I think he should win if he gets good ground. And, you know, I think what he did in the July Cup was outstanding. And, you know, the more I watched it back, I probably didn't even appreciate how good it was at first glance. I think it was racing at Limerick on the day. Thought it was a good performance, but when you watch back what he's kind of gone through to get there, he's top drawer when he gets those conditions. And I'm not saying he's not effective at an ease in the ground, because he was far from disgrace at Deauville, but I just don't think he's the same horse when there's an ease in the ground. So he's highly exciting in those conditions.
I feel like I'm just repeating myself throughout on this podcast, but seeing as we mentioned Gordon Lord Byron earlier, he won the race in 2013. What of this year's Irish Raider, Gustavus Weston, Mark? What can you tell us about him? Because he's been performing really admirably in decent contests back over the Irish Sea.
Very much so. And John Murphy has done a savage job with him. I mean, this horse, early on in his career, while he was a kind of a relatively solid kind of Group 3, Group 2 horse, he just looks to have turned a corner at the age of 5. And I previously kind of would have thought that, I'm not saying he's totally ground dependent, but you know, he's very effective with a good dig in the ground. And I'd say, looking at previous years, the Sprint Cup, where it does happen where you do get a cut in the ground, I'd say you'd be licking your lips in terms of him having a chance of hitting the frame if we did get an ease. And he's won on yielding the last time, but I just think if it is genuine good ground, there's others that will be better served by that than him. But he's really gone the right way this year. And I have to say, Joe Murphy's, He had a hard year last year. Just things didn't fall right for him. Horses weren't running up to scratch. This year, he's had an absolute beano. The horses have been running brilliant. There was a period there where he couldn't send out a loser. They were all winning. Really delighted to see him going well. And he's a very, very capable dual-purpose hander. In recent years, you know, Swamp Fox has flown the flag in some of those big handicaps. And unfortunately, he died as a 7-year-old, if I remember right. And you'd love to see this horse run well. It would be a victory. It would be very, very popular on this side of the water if it did come off. I would just think on good ground, Starman might just have a gear or two too much for him.
Rightio. Further down in the betting, we've got Garrus, who broke his group race duck at Deauville over the weekend. And then good old Brando at the age of 9. He's going to be involved, isn't he, in some capacity. Even Emiratiana, second to Winter Power in the Nunthorpe, of course, could be back up to the 6 furlongs here. G-Rod, who do you think will be the main threat to the favourite?
I think Creative Force will be the main threat to the favourite, Maddie, if he lines up here. Obviously, he was turned over last time out. Goodwood, when he's very strong in the market by Kim Ross. But I think Kim Ross is very good also on soft ground. And I think Creative Force probably would ideally have preferred quicker conditions, albeit he did win on soft ground at Ascot. You know, he was 2 lengths behind Starman at Newmarket, Creative Fourth, when he was 5th. Now, Newmarket is a bit of a different track to Haydock, Newmarket being quite a downhill track until they hit the dip, particularly on the July course. So maybe a slight more emphasis on stamina might suit Creative Fourth, because, of course, he has recorded most of his best form over 7 furlongs. So I think that he will be the biggest danger to Starman. But if Starman turns up in the same form that he was at Newmarket, he will win, of course.
I don't think Creative Force has had the rub of the green the last twice. The July Cup, he was sort of stuck a little bit on the near side, wasn't he? And it was a bit messy mid-race. And then last time behind Kinross, he was probably the sort of the moral winner, if you like, wasn't he? Because he was so far back in that Lennox Stakes, which can be a bit of a graveyard for horses, given the traffic problems. So I think he'll be very interesting to see if he can get closer to Starman. And that's all we've got time for on today's show. But before we leave you, let's get the all-important naps for this week.
This will not be beaten.
Mark, I'll let you go first. Who are you pinning your hopes to this time around?
Well, we've got no Irish racing tomorrow, so a little bit light on kind of material to go at from a declaration standpoint and be totally emphatic on one. But at Goran tomorrow in the 3:35, it's not the highest grade handicap now by any means, but Petticoat Rule is one that I think that there is still, although she's gone up a little bit in the weights this year, I still think there's a decent day in her. She is effective with her knees in the ground, but also has form on good quick surface as well. I think she's pretty versatile. A mile at Goran should suit her pretty well. And yeah, she'll do for me. Petticoat Rule in the 3:35 at Goran on Wednesday.
Brilliant. And Graham Rodway, where are you looking this week?
Mine runs in the opener at Haydock on Saturday, Maddie, in the 1:15. Horse called Half It, who's owned by a Godolphin and trained by Charlie Appleby. I was at Newmarket last week on Friday when a horse called Razzle Dazzle absolutely razzle dazzled. It was a fantastic performance. He won by a long way that day, and I thought he looked very, very good, Razzle Dazzle. And first time out, Razzle Dazzle finished second behind a horse called Half It. And the front two were 3.5 lengths clear of the remainder that day at Newmarket. And I have a feeling that they are both very good. Half It's got a declaration in the Royal Lodge Stakes later in the season. I think you can get about 10-1 on him for that. So that could look very good should he win on Saturday. And yeah, I'll be fancying him quite strongly. That's Half It in the 1:15. And certainly from a future perspective, I'd be putting that Razzle Dazzle into your tracker, because I think that is going to be a Razzle Dazzle as the season goes on. Might even be a Group One horse, that Razzle Dazzle. What a great name.
A good name. Let's hope he can live up to that and claim the crown. Who was third behind Half It on debut, has since gone in and won as well, so that form looks rock solid. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you again next week. Remember to rate, review and subscribe, and Bruce and the team will be back on Friday as usual to guide you through the weekend fair. All the best. Ta-ra.